This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Kind of liking this jazzy music. I feel like I should be sitting here playing the drums to it or something. Your thoughts in the comment section, Substack, and YouTube as we get into day 7 of the trial that is supposedly going to tell us whether or not Keefe D is officially the man or one of the men behind the murder of Tupac Shakur. In day 7, Malcolm Greenridge took the stand. He was court ordered to be there. He didn't volunteer, and he told the jury that Tupac Shakur was his childhood friend, his big brother, his mentor. He rode to Las Vegas with Tupac and his fiance. Oh. Did you know Tupac had a fiance? Yeah. Kadeah Jones for the Mike Tyson fight. He was in the car behind the BMW when shots hit it on the Las Vegas Boulevard. The prosecutor asked Greenridge where the shots came from. From inside the vehicle, Greenridge said. The back seat. The answer matters because the prosecution alleges Dwayne Keefe D. Davis was in the front. And in the world, the prosecution spent day 7 building for the jury. The front seat is where the orders came from. Greenridge is also known as Idi Amin, a rapper and producer, founding member of the Outlaws, the group that recorded an album with Tupac and was featured on many of Tupac's tracks. He is prosecution witness number 19 and the first person from Tupac's inner circle to take the stand. Every witness from Tupac's world has been compelled to appear. People closest to the murder don't want to participate in the case built around it. Greenridge rode to Vegas for the Tyson fight in a Lexus with Tupac and Jones, Quincy Jones's daughter, by the way. He didn't go to the actual fight. He waited for Tupac's call and never got it. He was in a car behind the BMW on Las Vegas Boulevard when a white Cadillac pulled up alongside it. He told the jury he saw the shooter's arm but could not see the faces of the people inside. He could not identify anyone in the vehicle. When he was able to reach Tupac, he yelled at him to get on the ground. They're coming. Gonna shoot you. When he turned around, a police officer had a shotgun pointed at his face. He gave a statement to the police that night. After the shooting testimony, Greenidge told the jury that Tupac was building when he died. Tupac was starting his own record label. He wanted to release the Outlaws album distributed through Death Row Records. He was in talks with Quincy Jones, his fiance's father, to do business together. Tupac was only 25 years old. He had a label, an album, and a meeting with one of the most powerful men in the music industry. The man in the front seat of the white Cadillac allegedly ended all of it. A juror asked Greenidge, one question. Were shots ever fired from your crew towards the attackers? His answer, no. The shooting on September 7th, 1996 was one-directional. Shots from the Cadillac into the BMW. Tupac's side did not ever fire back. In the afternoon, the prosecution called Robert Ladd. Ladd is a former Compton Police Department gang detective who spent years working the Southside Compton Crips as part of the department's two-man gang unit. He and his partner carefully tracked the gang's membership, operations, and internal hierarchy until Ladd retired in 2014. He has said publicly that he and his partner tried to tell investigators who was responsible for the shooting decades ago. Ladd testified he was familiar with Davis in the 95-96 timeframe. He told the jury Davis was ranked as high as you can get in the Southside Compton Crips. He identified Davis as a shot caller, the person in the gang hierarchy who decides what happens and who does it. A shot caller doesn't carry the gun. He doesn't fire a shot. He gives the order. That's the distinction the prosecution has been building towards for 7 days. And Ladd is the witness who explained it to the jury in plain language. Ladd was asked about Orlando Anderson. The nephew Davis had described in recordings as his best friend, his everything. Ladd said he'd made contact with Anderson many, many times over the years. He testified that he witnessed what was essentially Andre's gang initiation. Gunfire erupted so close to Ladd and his partner that they barely survived it. They later learned the shooting was part of the initiation process. Anderson became a full member of the Southside Compton Crips. He was shot and killed in an unrelated gang shooting in May of 98 at the age of 23. All three other men who were allegedly in the white Cadillac that night are dead. Anderson is dead. DeAndre Smith, who prosecutors allege was in the back seat with Anderson, is dead. Terrence Brown, allegedly in the driver's seat, also dead. Hey, kids, what's a great industry to get into? Gangbanging. Yeah, it works out well. Everybody ends up dead. Davis is the only person from the car still alive 30 years later. His own words, recorded across multiple formats over nearly two decades, are the prosecution's entire case. There is no other surviving witness from inside the Cadillac to contradict him, and no other surviving witness to confirm it either. The prosecution has to build its case from what Davis chose to say and from experts like Ladd, who can tell the jury that those words and what they mean inside the gang's hierarchy. Ladd then discussed how gang culture operates at its core. Members live for respect, he testified. The prosecution asked what a member would do if he felt disrespected. That question carries context, the jury has heard all week. Prosecutors allege the shooting was retaliation for the brawl at the MGM Grand, where Tupac and his entourage jumped Anderson hours before the murder. The brawl was captured on security camera footage the jury has already seen, and you probably have too, in the last 30 years. Anderson was beaten on the casino floor by multiple members of Tupac's entourage. According to the prosecution's theory, Davis, the highest-ranking Southside Crip in the group, decided that the beating could not go unanswered. The Cadillac, the gun, the drive down Las Vegas Boulevard followed from that decision. Ladd also addressed his own department's history. He insisted that the Compton Police Department's dissolution was not due to police corruption, getting ahead of any defense attack on his credibility before it arrived. The prosecution's purpose with Ladd is to connect the hierarchy to the charge. Greenidge said, the shots came from the back seat. Ladd told the jury the man in the front seat was the highest ranking member of the gang. Together, those two facts draw the picture. The shot caller handed the gun back and let someone else fire it. Day 7 was the day the prosecution connected the front seat to the charge. Davis's own words have been playing on tape for a week. The 2008 proffer, the 2009 interview, the Death Row Chronicles recordings, the book, those words established what happened in the Cadillac. Greenidge established where the shots came from. Ladd established what it means to be the man in the front who doesn't fire. In the hierarchy of the Southside Compton Crips, according to Ladd's testimony, the shot caller is more responsible than the shooter. Without the order, the trigger never gets pulled. The prosecution isn't charging Davis with being in the car. They're charging him with being the reason the car was there. The fiction defense now has to contend with more than Davis' own statements. It has to connect and contend with a former gang detective who has no stake in the documentary, no book deal, and no camera crew. Ladd says Davis's position in the gang meant that if he was in that Cadillac, he was directing the operation. That isn't something Davis told an interviewer. That's something the hierarchy tells you. Between Greenidge and Ladd, the prosecution ran three witnesses through the evidence from the September 23 search of Davis's Henderson home, crime scene analysts Jeffrey Scott and Stevie Fellebaugh. Documented the scene, Detective Justine Gastis testified about the items impounded. The jury saw photos of Davis's copy of Compton Street Legend, his own book about the shooting. They saw newspaper clippings about the 96 murder recovered from his home, articles mentioning Orlando Anderson, articles mentioning Biggie Smalls, sorted in bins for decades. A juror asked Scott, what piece of evidence were you expecting to find in a location that was different from 30 years ago? Scott said he wasn't expecting to find anything specific. He was just there to document whatever the detectives pointed to. The answer the prosecution couldn't get in that moment. The evidence survived because the shot caller kept it. He published the book. He saved the clippings. The man Ladd identified as the highest ranking member of the crew built a personal archive of the murder he allegedly ordered. Greenidge didn't want to be there. He told the jury what Tupac was planning at 25, the label, the album, the business with Quincy Jones, and he told them the shots came from the backseat. Couldn't name the shooter. Couldn't identify anyone in the car, but could tell them where the gun was pointed from. That was enough. Ladd told them who was in the front. The clippings in the Henderson house told them the rest. It's looking a little damning. It's looking a little damning for Keefe D. You know, if he didn't write the book, if none of this would have happened, if he didn't write the book, didn't do all the interviews, he wouldn't be on trial right now. Because quite honestly, I think if you just brought him to trial without all of that, I don't know that you'd have enough to convict. You wouldn't have enough to get to trial, quite honestly. At the end of the day, his own words, Keefe D's words, are what is going to matter more than any witness willing or unwilling to take this stand. Will they be enough to convict him? Will his own words be the nail in his own coffin? What do you think? Tell me in the comments section. Substack and YouTube. Take the podcast with you wherever you are going. There's the QR code right there. Scan it. And then there you go. We're with you on your device, on whatever podcast player you prefer. Apple Podcasts, Spotify. We are there. Join us. Shall you? Until next time. My name is Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's the Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.